Honesty without compassion is cruelty. Now, I can tell you the truth about yourself, but I need to be compassionate about it. If I'm doing it to make myself feel better, then I'm telling myself a story to justify my actions and behaviors. Meaning, right here, my alcoholic life seems like the only normal one. I can't differentiate the truth from the false. So when we're looking at these statements and these considerations, we can look at it in terms of the stories I tell myself about my drinking. And I can look at it in the stories I tell myself about why I stole $20 out of my husband's pocket in the morning because I was too lazy to wake him up. And he thought he lost it for 2 days. And then I was afraid to tell him I did it because he was all upset about losing this $20. And it was just because he lost this $20. Like, $20 is nothing to us. But it was 5 o'clock in the morning. I took $20 out of his pocket, not even thinking about it. Gave it to my son. For 2 days, he's looking for this $20, and I didn't even think to tell him. And then all of a sudden, I realized he's gone. He's like, where'd it go? Like, who stole it? And he's thinking, and I was like, I took it. I didn't even realize it. Like, I just did it and didn't even think about how selfish and inconsiderate it was to do it. To not even just let him know, or like, hey. And then so he's going nuts thinking he's losing money and doesn't want to tell me because I'm the main breadwinner of our family, and he's feeling emasculated to begin with. And I just created a situation with my husband and made a situation that he's struggling with even worse because I was selfish and inconsiderate and couldn't take the 1 minute to tell him, hey, I'm grabbing my son, I'm grabbing $20 out of your pocket to give my son for lunch money. And then I tell myself this story that I was running late, it was early in the morning, I forgot, it's not that important. No. So we do this all the time, right? And it doesn't make us bad people, but I have to become awake to this stuff. So did I apologize? Yeah. Will I do that again? No. Because I didn't realize how much that really meant to him and how much that specific thing. And, you know, I didn't think about it. I'm like, oh, I'm going to work. I'm busy. And I'm leaving him home unemployed. And he's thinking he's losing money that I'm working my ass off to get. And he felt like a total piece of crap. And it was my selfishness and inconsiderateness that placed him in the position where that started that ball rolling because I didn't think about his thoughts or feelings and I was busy. That's what I told myself. That's not the truth. I couldn't be bothered. And I was lazy. That's the truth. So we couch our stuff all the time. Because if I tell myself the truth about myself all the time, most of the time I'll be like a jerk. Nobody will like me. I'm kidding. But we do this in order to, it's a shorthand, it's convenient, it's easier. But if I keep doing it, what happens? Then I start creating this web of lies in my life. I start creating this movie and this script, and you're not living up to it, and I'm not living up to it. And I'm telling myself so many things that I'm backed in the corners that I don't even know that I'm in. And I'm assuming that you have my values because I'm projecting my values on you because I have these values, I have these belief systems, I have these fears, I have these ideas. And now I'm placing them on you. So now I'm responding to you as if you have these values, these lies that I tell myself that I assume you do too. Because my life and what I think is the only way that people think. So now I start treating you in disrespectful and unspiritual ways, assuming that you're going to behave the way I behave because the alcoholic life is the only normal one. So now I'm treating you and underestimating you and treating you without love or kindness. And I'm thinking for you. And I'm manipulating you. And I'm doing all of this stuff based on the fact that I'm telling myself stories in order to justify or explain myself to myself because I don't want to look at things that make me feel icky and that humble me and that might not put me in the best light. And that's the truth. So we do it with booze, we do it with character defects, we do it with traffic. When I'm in traffic and I'm late and I'm mad at the woman in front of me, I say out loud, how dare you take your time and live your life and inconvenience me? Sometimes when I actually say the crazy, stupid stuff that comes to my head out loud, I hear what a jackass I am and I go, but see, if I put it in the, or I'll say, I badly managed time, and therefore you're inconveniencing me. We have to start calling the spade, guys. Because if we don't, We end up right here. We can't differentiate the truth from the false. Our alcoholic life seems like the only normal one. We're irritable, restless, and discontent. Irritable. I'm easily angered. Restless. Can't sit still. Discontent. Unhappy. Those are, you know, like, think about that for a minute. How many times has somebody pointed out that we're irritable, restless, and discontent, in other words? And we're like, I'm just having a bad day. Sometimes we are. Most of the time, this is the spiritual malady. The doctor's opinion actually breaks down craving, mental obsession, and spiritual malady in the first handful of pages. And does it so beautifully. So if you want a good description of what the spiritual malady looks like without alcohol in your system, irritable, restless, and discontent, that's the thing that drives us to drink when alcohol is not there. Now, mind you, in between drinking bouts, so I drink and I stop at 3 o'clock in the morning when I pass out and I get up in the morning, I'm irritable, restless, and discontent, and that feeling, that need to drink, will keep growing and growing and growing until I do. So irritable, restless, and discontent shows up in two separate ways for us. It is either what we feel in the midst, while alcohol is still in our system, alcohol processing will be in your system for up to 72 hours, by the way. So for those who say, well, I drank on Monday and then I didn't drink again on Wednesday, I must not be an alcoholic. Were you a jackass on Tuesday? Then you are. Just saying. That's craving. When we're absent for an extended period of time and we're irritable, restless, and discontent, that's the spiritual malady showing up. So we can look at this in two different ways, in two different points. If you're not an alcoholic and you have some other kind of ick and you're irritable, restless, and discontent, that's your ism showing up. And that's kind of the way we gauge that or how we look at that. So it goes on to say that a person who is doomed can recover, right? We can recover from this hopeless state of mind and body. Except for what we have to do is follow a few simple rules. This is not a program of suggestions. This is a suggested program of action. And that's two very different things. A program of suggestions are things that I might do if I feel like it. A suggested program of action is something I need to do if I want to live. Two very different things. So I like the rules and the musts. And we have all done that. Have you guys counted the musts in the big book? There's a lot, yeah. You know? And I love that. Have you counted the promises? You ever do that? Promises or results? I like the word results. I don't like the word promises because I made a lot of empty promises. But cause and effect, I understand that. What goes up must come down. That's cause and effect. There's a lot of cause and effect or results. In fact, actually, it says we commence to get results. So that's, I didn't make that up. I'm not that smart. But there's a lot of results in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's not just after the 9-step. Yeah, I hate that, by the way. The promises of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I go, damn, we really shorten ourselves. Because there are some better promises after 10, and some really awesome ones at 11, and some rocking ones at 12. And then there's a ton in the lost chapters, the chapters that nobody ever reads, called To the Wise and the Family Afterward. I didn't read them because I wasn't a wife at the time, and I hated my family. But if you actually read, I call those now the practice these principles chapters. Because this is, shows us, you know, up until this point, it tells us, you know, tells us how, like, to get to the point where we can actually figure out how not to be jerks. And then To the Wives and the Family Afterwards says, well, this is what not being a jerk looks like. And I need that. You know, because you can tell me what not to do, and that's fine, right? But you got to tell me what to do instead, because I can get the what not to do. But the problem is I don't know what to do instead. Right? I got nothing to replace that with. So I know how I can get that I'm not supposed to be selfish. I just don't know what being unselfish looks like. And those chapters really go into great detail as to how that shows up and what that looks like. So the The book goes on and talks more and more about craving, but I think that we covered it in some pretty sufficient detail. Does anybody have any questions about what craving means? What it is, how that shows up, what the physical allergy is? You guys know what the mental obsession is? What is it?
It's the constant thought repeating over and over and over and over, and it's like, consumes you.
True. That's one aspect of it. So,
thought you can drink again like normal.
That's another aspect of it.
What did you say?
Awesome. That obsession that someday we'll be able to drink like normal.
Ah, thank you.
That's part of it. There's many aspects of it, actually. One is truly what we call the mental obsession, is literally the obsessive thought to drink. The other one is the old threadbare idea that we can drink like other people. Another aspect of it is the inability to bring into our thought process with enough power to deter us from drinking the consequences of even a week or a month ago. Then there's also a suddenly. Suddenly, I can have alcohol if I put it up my butt. People do that, you know, by the way. And tampons. Because, you know, drinking is bad, but I can put it in other orifices and it'll be just fine.
There's a mental obsession that may not rear its ugly head for 2 years and then in one night is there. And I experienced that after 2 years of not drinking, this is pre-AA, mm-hmm. At dinner with my cousin at a steakhouse. Had a drink
mm-hmm.
that night, all out of nowhere. Let's have double martinis before dinner, and there was no stopping me, and it just came out of nowhere.
Yeah. So it was, it won't hurt me this time, here's how.
Well, the fact that I could go 2 years without obsessing about it meant yeah. I was an alcoholic.
So did you have carpet slippers on when you were, when you
did that happen? I'm sure I had any shoes on at all.
So the mental obsession shows up in many ways. You know, we use the words mental obsession, right? And basically what we're saying is the way that we think about alcohol is broken. That's really what we're talking about. Now, there is a solution, and more about alcoholism goes into great detail about how this broken thinking shows up for us. But it shows up not just with alcohol. And I'll give you an example. I have been a very good girl for 2 years and haven't slept with any newcomers. But he's really hot. So I'm going to have sex with him and it's going to be fine. Here's how. Isn't that the same kind of thinking? I mean, there's a lot of other stuff too, but that's the same kind of thinking, right? Or, let's see. This time it won't hurt me, or how about this? We'll say the consequences of the experience or the consequences of a specific behavior or certain thing don't come into our mind to deter us from doing something. Kind of like, you know, constantly sticking your finger in a light socket, right? This time I won't get electrocuted. Well, we do that, right? So like say we have a boss and we want this boss's approval, acceptance, and love. But of course, this boss knows we want their approval, acceptance, and love. So what's the last thing they're going to give you? Approval, acceptance, and love. But I'm going to turn myself inside out through jumping jacks and handstands and cartwheels and spin around in circles saying, look at me, I'm awesome. And every time I do that, he goes, mm-hmm. And I don't get the acceptance, approval, and love. But I keep going back to get it. And this time it'll be different. This time, I will really dazzle him. And this time, I will show him how awesome I am. And this time, and this time, and this time. Aren't I doing the exact same thing? I'm using human power. So when we talk about the alcoholic thinking, we're going to talk about it in regards to alcohol. We're also going to talk about it in regards to human power. That husband that you're just going to fix. If only you could just figure out what's wrong with him and help him to see it, he'll be better and then everything will be great. I know no woman in the world thinks that at all. You know? Or that if I only have enough money in my bank account, right? There are two things. Women judge, we evaluate ourselves by our shoes, definitely. I will give them purses and shoes are important. They're definitely things that we use to judge ourselves. Most of the time we judge ourselves by our ability to care, take, and love, or how we see ourselves in those roles. So women, we tend to use super mom, super wife, super this, super that, right? We have a cape, and we got an S on our chest. Men, and I don't mean to generalize, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but for you guys, I mean, we're kind of socialized to believe that you're supposed to be strong, stoic, care, you're supposed to protect and provide. So our human powers kind of fall and say, like, where I fall asleep, dream, and I'm awake and start using human powers kind of fall along those lines, right? So men will, it's about providing, it's about working, it's about having the bank account and having the right lawnmower and having, you know, that sort of thing. If I provide the right kind of life for my family, I'm valuable and worthy. And women, if we have shoes and people think we're awesome, we're valuable and worthy. But it's kind of the same thing, isn't it? And it's that alcoholic thinking that shows up in different areas of our life. So when we talk about this mental obsession, we can talk about it in terms of our relationship with alcohol, but we can also talk about it in terms of a relationship with ourselves, because that's really what this is about. How do I relate to myself? So when we talk about, you know, when we look at it and say that Jim, right? Jim was a guy who owned an automobile. Or no, he didn't actually. He got demoted and somebody else owned his automobile agency, right? And he went to work on a Tuesday and everybody says, what about Monday, right? And then Jim went to work on a Tuesday and had words with his boss. Where was Jim hurting? Jim was hurting because he was working for somebody that he used to be a boss of in a company that he used to own. It hit him right where it hurts, didn't it? The provider, the wallet. He had a resentment. He had words with the boss. He doesn't say, I had words with the boss, wrote inventory, spoke to my sponsor and made amends. He had words with the boss. So what did he do? He ran away. He got in a car and said, I'm going to go out on the road, probably in Indiana somewhere, you know, because this is the only airport that I've gone to that had more cars than planes in it. So I'm thinking if it's just an automobile story, it might be right around here. But he got in a car and he went away, right? I'm not going to get to the causes and conditions of why I'm behaving the way that I'm behaving. I'm not going to broaden and deepen my spiritual experience. Instead, I'm going to get in a car and a scheme to make more money in order to feel important, right? So what does Jim do? He goes to a bar. Okay. And everybody goes, oh, there we go. People, places, and things. He's in a bar. Guys, I used to be a program manager for a halfway house for people who were MR and had severe mental illness. I used to count out Xanax, Ritalin, oxycodone, because they're not addicts. Well, whatever, they're state-sanctioned addiction if you want to ask me, but that's a whole other story. But I'd be sitting there, one Percocet, two Percocet, three Percocet, four Percocet. No, it's not alcohol, but I'm an addict, and I'm an alcoholic, and I have an ism. And if I have to sit here and fondle medication, controlled medication, then I know that's going to make me feel, woo, very good. And I have an alcoholic mind. At some point, one of those things is going to end up in my mouth, ain't it? But if I'm safe and protected and I'm living on a spiritual basis, not one of those Percocets ever ended up in my mouth. It's an amazing thing. So we talk about Jim, and Jim goes to a bar and he's looking for a sandwich and possibly a deal for this car. It wasn't the bar that was the problem. It was his thinking. It was suddenly, and that's a suddenly. Suddenly, I had the idea that after 2 years of abstinence, I could drink successfully even though I'm not wearing shoes or carpet slippers. Or suddenly, I could put alcohol, whiskey in a glass of milk and drink it. And it won't bother me, and here's how. First of all, if you got to say to yourself, this time it'll be different, and here's how. Ding, 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 warning sign, call sponsor now, hit your knees, pray. Because if I got to explain, if you've got to explain it to yourself, you shouldn't be doing it. That's what my sponsor always told me. It's like, Carrie, if you gotta tell yourself a story as to why you're doing it, stop. But when I have that alcoholic mind, when I'm in that spot, I can't see that. I can't see that I'm starting to tell myself a story as to why this time it'll be different if I drink alcohol and milk. I mean, I can't see that because I'm powerless. I can't see my alcoholism clearly. I can't see the way I think about my drinking clearly. Because frankly, if I could see that, my butt wouldn't be in this chair. If it were up to me and my thinking to be able to fix my drinking, I could be home right now, man. I could be getting I could have gotten a manicure today. I could be chilling out. You know, I could be by the pool. I got a pool. I could be on the deck. I'd be hiding from my children. But still, you know, if I can use my mind to fix my sick mind, I wouldn't need Alcoholics Anonymous. But I can't. So when I'm in that suddenly, I'm already in a point where it's sudden. So I need to broaden and deepen my spiritual experience so that I don't have a sudden. Because that's kind of the thing here. Is you ever hear the term think the drink through? Now, my book says the complete opposite. Says that I'm incapable of thinking the dream through. And it says at certain times, I cannot bring with sufficient force the experience of even a week or a month ago. It means that there are times when I can, and there are times when I can't. So I can't rely on that. But how many times have we done that with other things, with resentments or with behaviors or with things that are not aligned with our spiritual principles? Right? We do it all the time. The little white lies we tell, the justification, the need for validation of acceptance, or that guy who's really awesome, but he just doesn't know it, so I'm going to fix him. That's still that alcoholic thinking. So when we look at this, I want you to ask yourself, not just do I have this with alcohol, but do I have this thinking currently today and with what? Cheesecake? Maybe with my work, with my personal relationships, with myself. Do I have the no cloud on, there's not a cloud on the horizon? Which is, you know, most of this stuff is true, but I don't gotta do all of it because I'm not as bad as you guys. I'll do what I like. I'll cherry pick my recovery. I heard that. I love that one. I'll cherry pick the recovery that I'm going to practice. And then when I end up drunk or doing something completely ludicrous, I can say, see, this program doesn't work. Now, how many times a week I hear this program doesn't work? And this is where I ask it. I get newcomers coming into my home group saying, this program doesn't work. I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous for 15 years and I have not stayed sober. And here's what I say. Have you written inventory? Not a 3-column inventory based on the picture. Have you actually written three or four, depending if you conduct inventory, if you separate. Have you written inventory? Have you written a sex ideal? Have you completed all your amends? Do you do daily prayer and meditation? It's amazing how many people who tell me that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work, who have never worked the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So sometimes we've got that no cloud on the horizon. Everything's great, everything's great, everything's great. I don't have to work all that hard. Until everything's not great. And all of a sudden, I'm in the vortex of, I can have a highball or two after dinner. And then what was it, 3 days later, he's pouring out of a cab? So where does this thinking show up for me? I wanted to be able to get to step three, but I feel like we're kind of not there. And does everybody do this, say they're going to get through step three and then never do on Friday night? Is that why you all laughed at me? Okay. I said this and they laughed. And I was like, I'm going to do it because I'm awesome. And I made it through the two-thirds of step one. Not even, but So I guess we're gonna call it a night because I think we're getting a little restless and it's getting late.
Yeah.
And I will hopefully be able to cover the last little bit of step one and steps two and three first thing in the morning because I really want to move you into some inventory. I really want to do so. I've had some really great spiritual teachers, and I have some pretty awesome inventory stuff and some pretty awesome spiritual, things to try. And I'd really like to be able to talk about them so we can actually do them tomorrow. So with that, I guess we'll wrap it up tonight, and hopefully we'll stay on path tomorrow and I can get to where I want to be. Thank you.